Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times, to spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions. To learn more, go to nytimes.com/worthit.
Hi, I'm Imri, the host of the Wannabe Podcast, the podcast that takes you from where you are now to where you want to be in 30 minutes or less. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I'm so excited to have you here listening to me. This week, I am joined again by the young fashion designer, Chloe Marlowe. If you didn't hear her on Monday's episode, please do circle back and check that out. It was just so jam-packed with actions. Chloe is the founder and designer behind Marlowe London, a luxury accessories brand. Chloe attended Central Saint Martins, and a year later, she launched Marlowe London. Her bags have been photographed on British singer Ray, presenter Maya Jama, and blogger and designer Whitney Valverde. In today's episode, we talk about why it's important that you just start now and the value of gaining experience in different areas of the industry you want to work in. It's an amazing episode, so enjoy. Who did you want to be before you became who you are and why?
So when I actually found a diary entry recently from when I was 14 years old.
Oh, wow.
And it says, when I grow up, I want to be a fashion designer. So I think I always knew I wanted to be in the world of fashion. Mm-hmm. I didn't quite know how I was going to get there, but I always knew I wanted to be somebody or something or have an impact in that industry.
In fashion specifically,
yeah.
So then what did you do next? So you wanted to work in fashion, and were you drawing a lot? Were you sketching? Like, what were you doing that kind of got you into that in the first place?
So I just doodled. I doodled on everything. My parents got quite frustrated. I was doodling on walls, on doodling.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That was like during the time of like renovation. We had like, okay, they had like a wall that we could doodle on. So I was like doodling on walls, doodling in notebooks. Teachers were getting very frustrated because every corner of every page was a doodle. So I was always drawing.
What were you drawing?
Flowers and like squiggles. And then it did become dresses and I guess prints. And that's kind of where I led on to later on. But just doodling and playing and colouring. And I did art at school, after school art classes, watercolour classes, anything creative. And that led me to pursuing a degree in textile design.
Nice.
At Central Saint Martins. So that's kind of how I began that creative path.
Nice. What is textile design like? What does that even involve?
So it's more like surface design of products. So it could be like we were doing knitting, weaving, print design, like silk screen printing. It's very hands-on, very technical, but very like color focused, yeah, and pattern focused. So it's quite expressive and quite fun.
Why that? If you were doodling and you're like, I want to be in fashion design, then why textile design? Is that,
yeah,
how does that relate?
So I did a foundation before I did my degree, and you actually get to experiment on every kind of aspect of fashion. So from, mm-hmm, styling to textiles to women's wear. And I did begin with the thought that I want fashion. I have to be a women's wear designer.
Yeah.
But I actually found throughout the course that I was more focused on what was happening on the garment than what the actual garment was.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I kind of got advised that I was more suited for a textile degree than I would be fashion.
Interesting.
So, yeah,
that's quite fascinating, actually. I remember when I did my degree, I did anthropology,
right?
Biological anthropology specifically. But I was on general track for anthropology, and then, yeah, as we start kind of picking modules and things, I actually just gravitated more towards the biological and medical side of things, and you kind of don't really. It's almost like it's just something else guiding you. Did you ever feel like it was like your choice, or you like?
or did it feel kind of existential, like, oh, I'm just really intrigued by this thing, I don't know, I'm just gravitating there? Or did it feel like, no, I really want to do that?
No, I think I gravitated towards it, because yeah. I thought I really wanted to be making clothes, and I thought that's what I was having to be doing to get into fashion. I didn't realise there's other aspects of the industry yeah. and of design. So I definitely gravitated more towards textiles than I, yeah, more than I realised, actually.
Yeah, I think there's something to the pull of something else elsewhere, because yeah. I was definitely like medicine. Right. And then I was like, that's too technical. And then I moved more towards the biological, which kind of is like a happy marriage of like monkeys and bones. And I was like, yes, this is exactly what I want to do. Yeah, I did that for a while and it was fun. But I do quite like the idea of a foundation course in a subject. I right. don't know that a lot of people do that. And I think they're incredibly valuable. One of my friends did a foundation course before she did anthropology and then found out she didn't want to do anthropology,
right, exactly,
which was
yeah.
really useful to know. And my sister right now, she's 17 and she's torn between fashion marketing and educational psychology. I'm like, these are two very different things. And she's having to apply to uni right now. And would you recommend foundation degree first for anything? And is it like just in general, or is it mostly just fashion oriented?
I definitely recommend a foundation degree. I know for what I wanted to do in St. Martin's, you had to have a foundation. So I don't know if different courses differ and if there are foundations for different types of courses, but I definitely recommend doing like taster sessions. Yeah. I thought I was going to be doing, at one point, my parents very much wanted me to do a real degree
yeah.
and go to a real university. So I was looking at history of art and languages, and I yeah. went to a taster day, and honestly, I couldn't last 1 hour, let alone 3 years. So that really like put it into perspective for me. So I definitely recommend
yeah.
getting a taste of the degree that you want to pursue.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
I should have told her that. I did not tell her that. I told her to take a gap year and figure it out. But that's really cool. So real degrees
yeah.
versus fake degrees.
Right.
You went to Central St. Martin's, which is like mecca of fashion. Was that difficult? And what was it like whilst you're there? And how much did it help and enhance your kind of creativity that led you to create the line that you now have?
So Central St. Martin's has the name
yeah.
and it's just known to be very difficult to get into. So I applied for the real degrees and I had St. Martin's as like the kind of the dream. I just kind of did as well. Like if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And it happened. And I don't think anyone kind of was expecting that to happen. And
yeah.
so I did my foundation, but I also deferred a place at actually Nottingham University just because after you do the foundation, you've got to apply again. So there's still no certainty that you'll get in for the degree.
Yeah.
But I completed the foundation and I loved it. And I really, really wanted to get into the degree. I didn't want to have to go to lectures and essays.
Yeah.
I got on. And I worked so, so hard in those 4 years. I don't think I've ever worked so hard in my life. And I still think that's the hardest I've ever worked. Because you've got to prove yourself. Everyone's yeah. so talented. You're amongst the best of the best.
Yeah.
And they believe they're the best of the best as well. So you're dealing with so many egos and like very confident people that are very confident in their work. And you've really got to prove yourself constantly.
Yeah.
So that was hard. But I loved it. And I loved the creative freedom because you really pushed to be as creative as possible.
Yeah.
And as unique as possible. So it was very interesting. People were crazy. Like you come in, someone's got blue hair one day, purple the next.
Wow.
Yeah. The clothes, everyone's personalities and attitudes. It was very cool. It was like walking through, have you seen Fame?
Yeah.
At the beginning of Fame, everyone was like walking through dancing. So
yeah.
like the hallways, you had such different types of people and there'd be live exhibitions going on because we had a drama school at the back and they'd be doing
oh, wow.
like live performances every so often, jumping out. It was crazy. It was so cool.
No, that sounds so much fun.
Yeah.
My uni was so boring. Oh my gosh. Like it was so boring. But I was in the north and that was really boring as well.
Right.
But no, that sounds really beautiful and like fun and vibrant.
Yeah.
I can imagine though, were there not ever occasions where you just felt like this is almost too much?
Oh, completely.
And then how do you then cope with that?
Right. So yeah, definitely. Especially because there's a lot of pressure and there's time constraints and you can do so much in the time that you've got.
Yeah.
And it gets to you. And, you know, everyone has their moment where they're in tears in the corner. But you've got to kind of put everything into perspective because sometimes it does get too much and you have to realise what's important, what your intention is and break it all down and work out how you're going to get there.
Yeah.
So I'm a list writer. So nice. I'm literally every like the beginning of every week I have like I call it like the motherload list.
It's everything.
Yeah. It's an epic list. It's pages long.
Oh my God.
Literally everything that I just need to do in general.
Yeah.
And then I write another list breaking down what I need to do that week. And then, like the psycho that I am, I write another list.
Oh, wow.
Like a daily breakdown. And that really helps me kind of just focus on what I was doing. So I used to do that a lot at university. And then I used to find just talking to other people. Because you think that everyone else has it together and they know what they're doing. Because they look like they do. But once you talk to them, you can all relate and you're all struggling.
Yeah.
And that really helps.
That's really good.
Yeah.
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times, to spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions. To learn more, go to nytimes.com/worthit.
I can't believe how many lists you write.
Oh, that's crazy.
It is insane. I'm getting anxiety just from hearing about all of these lists. I think one of those things, what I've learned from this podcast is like everyone has a very unique strategy or routine for getting themselves organized. I'm actually kind of a mental chaos person. So I kind of know what I need to do in different parts, but I just flow where my I go where my energy is flowing in that moment. So if I feel like website's where I need to be, that's what I'm gonna do.
Right.
It's probably not the best case for prioritizing, because then like loads of things get half done and not quite finished, which is bad. But I can't focus in that way. It's really strange. So was that something you've always done? Like you've always had lists throughout your whole life?
Yeah, literally. My mum comes in my room, she's like, oh, another list. Apparently I've been doing it forever. I can't help it.
Wow.
Like my lists are ridiculous. It's even like 8 a.m. wake up, brush teeth, get dressed.
Oh my God.
It's very specific.
Do you just use traditional pen to paper or are you on like tech?
Oh no, pen to paper. And I have like written diaries. It's always pen to paper.
Oh, that sounds lovely. I love a good notebook.
Yeah,
I love a diary.
Yeah.
I just like purchasing those things. I'd never use them. I'd like to keep them really pristine. I tried a bullet journal once.
Okay. What's a bullet journal?
Oh my God. So a bullet journal is this really what's meant to be simple way of organizing your day, but you essentially have a plain notebook or like a grid notebook and you design like a key, and there's like a traditional bullet journal key. So there's like a bullet point for something, a task that needs to get done. And then you have like an arrow through it if you didn't get through to that task. So it has to be deferred to the next day.
Okay.
And then there's like a star for something that's really important. And an exclamation mark for something else as well. I don't really remember all the key points, but it already hurt my head. But in theory, I was like, no, this is cool. Because loads of people, if you like YouTube bullet journals, people have done like insane designs. Like they have like goal lists within their bullet journal and like their food shopping diaries. And people have created this entire world around the bullet journal. So like the key is just a small part. It's just how you kind of organize and structure your life, and I think it's definitely built for the creative. And I feel like I'm a creative in my mind but not to hand. So I did it for about 2 weeks and then I just couldn't, because I like mine was just really ugly and it was so much pressure and I just couldn't do it. But definitely check it out.
I might try bullet journal.
Some people say
flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
help them be infinitely more productive.
Really?
So it could help match your doodling,
yeah,
and your list making and put it into one place. But yeah, being organized is a really key thing. So you now you've successfully manufactured some beautiful handbags, leather, vegetable tanned leather.
Yes.
We had to get it correct. Bags. And you're still quite young, kind of like smoothly just left uni and you're manufacturing. Do you feel like this was the right time for you to do that? You spent a year, right? So
yes, I'm 24. So I graduated in 2015. So it's been 2 years since I graduated, 1 year since I launched.
Yeah.
Is it ever a right time? I don't know. Like, a lot of people said to me, oh, you're too young, you need more experience. But as in, you only have so much experience, and otherwise you keep getting experience to get experience.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've been doing internships throughout university. I was apprenticing and I was freelancing. So I've been experiencing so many different sides of the industry already. And I just wanted to give it a go. Like, if not now, when?
Yeah. Was there like a specific moment or event that just happened that you said, you know what, let me do it now? Like, I just feel like I just need to do that. Like, what was there something significant that happened, or was it just...
I think when I graduated in apprenticing, I was working amongst artisans who were maybe 10 years older than me.
Yeah.
And they'd gone to like London College of Fashion or the Cordwainers, which are really great universities for handbag making.
Mm-hmm.
And they would all talk about wanting to start their own business one day, but it was always one day.
Yeah.
And my biggest fear, I was getting the anxiety that what if I'm here for 10 more years and I'm just talking about one day?
Yeah.
And that kind of was like, I just need to try and do it now. And if it fails, it fails. But I'm young and I might as well take the risk whilst I'm young and I have not many financial responsibilities just yet.
Yeah.
And just give it a go.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I think that's... Some people wait for a big sign and you're right. It's that, oh, one day. And they're waiting for like something to align and be perfectly in place.
Yeah.
For them to just say, okay, now.
Yeah.
Now I feel ready. But sometimes it's not that. Sometimes you just... The opportunity just feels right. You had access to a manufacturer,
and you had
access to people that were doing it, so you could just kind of test it out. I wanted to ask about the manufacturing process a little bit, and also the kind of financial side of launching a brand. And I have no desire to ever design things, but you never know where life will take you. So I may have a perfume line one day, because why not? I won't, but I can dream. But with manufacturing, I think there's so many parts that seem almost invisible to people who might, like a 14-year-old girl who wants to be a fashion designer. Like, what does that mean? What does manufacturing mean? Like, what does that look like? So how did you navigate that for your business? And also, how did you also think about the business side of like pricing and, you know, managing a whole kind of line to sell to people? Like, start from the beginning.
Okay. So I think I was a bit naive when I began.
Yeah.
I didn't realize everything that goes into a business. I thought it was easy as making a product and selling it.
Yeah.
But it's not. And it's I kind of realized that quite quickly. So the designs were actually from my final year at university. I made a giant bag, like a life-size bag. Well, bigger than life-size. Bags are life-size. But you know what I mean?
Like a human-size bag?
Yeah, I could fit in the bag if I wanted to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's kind of where the design came from. So I'd been working on making that a bit more commercial, mm-hmm. just for fun, really, whilst I was apprenticing. And then the moment I realised I wanted to turn it into a business... I really switched on, and I would listen to clients that would come in and kind of work out the relationship that they were having with the manufacturers and kind of what they discussed, where they got their leather sourced from, quantities and things like that.
Yeah.
So I was kind of picking things up. And I was very fortunate that I was making for these people. So I kind of knew the process that went into it.
Yeah.
So I was very conscious of being the worker, I guess. So now being the brand that's looking for manufacturing, I'm very conscious about, you know, fair pay and fair working conditions, because you're working with fumes. So I'm very pro made in Britain or made in Spain, made in Italy, where they're treated really well.
Yeah.
Because that's very important. But before that, I never knew there was such a concern for that.
Yeah.
I've actually forgotten the question.
Oh, like, so what was the process of kind of creating, so you're picking up stuff and then now you're having to think about the business side of things.
So manufacturing, I was very fortunate. I kind of fell upon it because it was just there for me. But usually it's quite difficult to find manufacturing. But I was,
can imagine.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to begin if I didn't have that source, especially in the UK.
Yeah.
I think especially in bag making as well, it's a dying industry. It was very big 50 or so years ago, but it's not doing as well now.
Yeah.
So I was very lucky that I had the manufacturing side. Business wise, I had no idea what I was doing. I kind of started an Instagram page.
Yeah.
Because I'm very creative, I'm very visual, I find that quite easy and quite natural.
Yeah.
And I'd begin my following. Price points and things, I'd have to start working out where I was in the market and where I wanted to be, and kind of working out who my competitors were, how they make their bags. Do they have pockets? Do they have zips?
Yeah.
Their colours, how many colours they make of each style, their measurements, and really could see how I fit in with that.
Yeah.
So I had to make sure I was competitive, yeah, on the same level.
Yeah.
Especially as I wanted to approach the stores that they already stocked in.
What kind of stores were you looking at?
So I guess I always try and aim high.
Why not?
Why not? Go hard or go home.
Right.
So like Selfridges and Browns and Harvey Nichols and Net-a-Porter and Matches Fashion. I would also just email people.
Yeah.
And I'm still doing that. It's actually worked wonders. Because I think people are just too scared to just try and say hello and introduce yourself. And I definitely was at the beginning. But as soon as I started getting myself out there, like people actually responded.
Yeah.
And like I had meetings and that's I went for really coffee good. With people. So definitely tried to put myself out there. And things kind of just fell into place.
Nice.
It wasn't as smooth as that, but slowly but surely things kind of fitted in.
Yeah. So let's go to emails real quick, because I love emails in general. Yeah. What kind of things were you saying, like in the initial period? So you've, at this point, I'm guessing you've got the bag or you've got like samples or things ready to kind of show and tell people like, this is what I've got, this is what I'm creating, and this is kind of where I'm seeing the brand go. What do you write in that initial email? Are you writing to sell or are you writing to just say, hey, how are you? Let's grab coffee. Like what is your first contact and what is your objective with that first email?
So I got really good advice that that people love to give advice. That was a piece of advice I got.
This is going to be really handy when I ask that question at the end. Yeah.
And people like to be appreciated, and people actually appreciate being reached out to.
Yeah.
They're flattered. So I'd always try and use my age actually, because I feel like that would get people like a bit interested and be like, oh, okay. But as I get older, it's like less effective.
Oh,
So I kind of just introduce myself and say what I'm trying to do. And I always include an image, because I feel like an image, people, when there's lots of words, I'd rather just, you know, focus on an image.
Yeah.
And because I have a product, that's something I can do quite easily. And I would always ask for just 20 minutes of their time for a coffee.
Yeah.
And to introduce myself and introduce my product in person. And I'd always include something personal about them and as to why I want to speak to them or why I'm inspired by them. And more often than none, they reply. And they're sometimes it's a no, I'm not, thank you, but it's not for us. Or other times it's, I'd love to meet. I'm not sure I can help you, how I can help you, but let's go for a coffee.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's really good. Some of the best places I've gotten to in my career anyway has always been because I emailed someone that I just liked.
Yeah.
And they just gave me some really quick advice. Sometimes it was just back and forth in an email. They said, just check this out or check out this person. And that led me to where I needed to be in that time. And so I think there's a lot of pressure on people when they write emails that their first port of call is to sell you something.
Yeah.
The first email is very rarely going to be the email that sells and makes you big money.
Completely.
So much conversation and relationship building is essential. But I think you are on the right track when you're saying you're just trying to grab coffee, have a conversation. And when people are being really honest and saying, I don't know how I can help you, but you never know when that person might be really key to the next stage when you're kind of trying to get somewhere else and they're like, oh, actually, I know that person.
Yeah.
And it's just an introduction that you need. So you never know. And I think that's really cool that you use emails as that. All right. So the final set of questions are, what's the worst advice you've ever received and what's the best advice you've ever received?
Oh, the worst advice I've ever received.
It's really hard.
That's really hard. Worst advice? I don't know if it's worst advice. Maybe, I think it's like waiting until you're completely ready. And I know that maybe that people don't think that's good advice, but by waiting and waiting, maybe you'll never find that moment.
Yeah.
And maybe you just need to give it a go. And you may be like not completely, as you think, perfectly ready.
Yeah.
But it might just be a big break.
Oh, nice. That's, yeah. Wait until you're ready.
Yeah.
Technically bad advice because you'll never
be ready. Yeah.
It's true. You'll never be ready. You might as well just do it and just get started, because essentially I think when people are trying to be ready, you're hoping that when you start, it's going to be an immediate success. And that's...
And it's not. It's always a journey. And
almost
it's always,
never happens.
Yeah. It's always a work in progress.
Yeah. So yeah. What's the best advice?
The best advice, I think, comes from my dad, and he always tells me, don't put off till tomorrow what you can get done today.
That's smart.
Yeah, because I do that a lot. I'm always like, I'll do that tomorrow, I'll do it tomorrow, I never get it done. But if you just do it,
it gets done.
It gets done.
You have to do it tomorrow.
Crazy. Yeah.
What a revelation.
I know.
Now I'm going to have to like do stuff today that I really wanted to do tomorrow, but I'm going to do it. Now that you've given me that very good, solid, sound advice. Thanks, Chloe's dad. All right. Thank you so much, Chloe. This has been such a treat.
Yeah, it's been so lovely.
A huge thank you to Chloe, who has been a phenomenal guest. Follow Chloe's brand on Instagram at Marlo_London. That's MARLOW_LONDON. And visit marlolondon.com to find out more about her gorgeous bags. If you like how this podcast is made and you think that you can do what I do, then you need to reach out to the Shout Out Network. To find out more about membership, visit shoutoutnetwork.co.uk. And also, we just launched Not Another Book podcast. So for any book fans out here listening, that podcast is for you. Go and check it out right now. If you're enjoying this podcast, please do leave a rating and a review on iTunes. It is the only payment that I ask for. And it's so lovely to read every beautiful thing that you have to say about this podcast. To get extended show notes listing the tools and resources that we've talked about in this episode and past episodes, visit wannabepodcast.com, as show notes are updated every Wednesday, so today. Thank you for listening, and bye.
Upwork has the world's largest network of independent professionals. So if you need a go-to designer, a video editor, or a social media specialist for 6 days or 6 months, Upwork is how. And it's basically like they're right here in your office, except they're not here, so they can't hear Greg's remarkably loud typing.
Hey, buddy!
I take it back. You can hear that from anywhere. And Upwork professionals are proven, rated, and reviewed. When you need in-demand talent on demand, Upwork is how.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.